Well, I want to start off by introducing you to a guy I've gotten to know over the last couple of weeks, and his name is Horatio Spafford. This is Horatio right here. Horatio was born in 1829. 1829, Horatio was born in New York, eventually moved to Chicago, became a really successful lawyer in Chicago. Earned a lot of money, man of great faith, a man that was super involved in a lot of ministries, both here in the United States, around Chicago area, but also to a lot of stuff around the world, and invested a lot of his money and around the world. Eventually met and married Anna. This is Anna. They met and married. Anna was an immigrant from Norway. They eventually had five kids. They had one boy and four girls. On the surface, as it looked optically, anybody that circled around the Spafford family would tell you that by all ways and means, everything in the Spafford life was going well. Well would be the opportunist, the word that would best describe their life together. Until the Great Fire of 1871, if you know the Great Chicago Fire of 1871, went through, burned most of Chicago, and burned a lot of the real estate investments that the Spafford family had. He had invested a lot of his money into real estate, and that all went away. On top of that, pretty soon after that, their boy, their only son, got scarlet fever and died at the age of four. So you can imagine now was time for a reset for the Spafford family. So 1873, they said, you know, it's been a tough run. Let's reset. Let's just kind of regroup and kind of, let's just change our environment. And they booked a trip to Europe, which would be great because it'd give them a little time to rest, a little bit of time to see some of the ministry investments they've made across the ocean. And so they decided they would do that, booked a trip in November of 1873 to go to Europe, to France. And so about as the trip came up, the schedule became a conflict for Horatio, and he said, oh gosh, you know, I have this opportunity. We still need to rebuild some of our investments. And so he said, you know what, let me stay behind. I'm going to put you guys, Anna and the girls, I'm going to put you guys on the boat, send you across on the ship, and I'll meet you there. I'll meet you there in a couple of days. It'll only be a couple of days. And so Spafford stayed behind, and Anna and the daughters went ahead across the ocean. So about midway across the ocean, in the middle of the night, a cold November night, the ship Anna and the girls were sailing on collided with a Scottish sailing ship, tore a gigantic hole in the side of their ship, and the ship sank in just 12 minutes. Of the 313 people on that ship, 226 of them died, including all four of the Spafford daughters. Anna was found unconscious by a rescue ship floating on a plank of wood, and she survived. She was rescued, she ultimately was taken to Wales. And 9 days later, after this shipwreck, sent a telegram back to Horatio, who was now in New York because he'd heard the news and went to New York to get on a boat to meet her. And she sent this, saved alone, what shall I do? And I think what shall I do meant what should I do right now, but what should we do? In this season of life that was going so well, what should we do now? And obviously Horatio, devastated, boarded a ship in New York, set sail for Wales. And as he sailed across the ocean, they got to the region where the shipwreck was. The captain called him up and said, hey, I just want you to pay your respects. This is the area where the shipwreck happened. Horatio spent a few minutes looking over the rail, the waves and the night, and the sea out in front of him, went back to his room, and history tells us, pulled out a piece of paper, and in a way to process his grief, wrote a poem, this exact poem right here. On this piece of paper, wrote a poem out, just said, I just need to put some stuff down on paper. Wrote a poem out and wrote some words that if you grew up in church or if you know hymns very well, it might be familiar to you. The lines in the poem that he wrote says this right here. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, which makes a lot of sense as he looked over the railing into the sea, whatever my lot thou hast taught me to say, it is well. It's well with my soul. And even amid all of his unwellness, he was able to write these words down and process this together. A few years later, a guy named Philip Bliss came along and put this to music, and it became the song that if you grew up in church, you might know this song as It Is Well With My Soul. We're going to talk about this a little bit today because we're in a series that is processing different songs that we sing or songs that we know, and It As Well has become kind of one of those anthems of faith in hard times. We're going to use this as we continue on this series we've been in called My Story, My Song, where the last couple of weeks Andy's been processing familiar and modern songs that we sing. But as I decided, hey, what song do we want to kind of process today? This one came back to me. And we're going to let this song, It Is Well With My Soul, speak to us in the same way that we've let some of the worship songs that we sing speak sermons to us as well. I gravitated toward It As Well for a couple of reasons. One is because it's born of a really familiar place. Whether you lived in 1873 and your family went through a shipwreck, or you're living in 2025 in Decatur, Georgia. It's born of a really familiar place for us. And that place is when life storms roll in. They don't all roll in the same way. Summer's a great time to talk about this because we see all sorts of types of storms. When storms roll into our lives, it feels familiar to us but it's also troubling for us, isn't it? When all isn't well for us. And I think it's in different phases. There's different phases of unwellness when we talk about this, because the first one really, I want to start simple, but I don't want to leave it out because it's honestly what we face more in our lives. It's when life storms roll in, and life, honestly, to best describe it, it's just annoying. It's just hard when life gets annoying, and the trouble isn't necessarily, you know, a wave. It's more of a kind of an annoying mist, or it's kind of a drizzle of nuisance that comes into our lives. But it still feels like unwellness, right? It's when you're running late and you turn onto one of our highways and there's all that traffic. It's when you go home and the dishwasher breaks and now we got to replace the floor because the water's all out, or the AC is out. You walk in and your house is 95 degrees. It's annoying, isn't it? It's troublesome. It's the times in life where your technology's not working, you're late, you gotta do something, and suddenly everything decides to update, and it's like, it'll be back in 35 minutes. You're like, I don't have 35 minutes, everything's updating. It's, you know, the package that gets delayed. It's that sound in the middle of night, the worst sound you could ever hear in the middle of night of your dog trying to throw up. You know how you have dogs, you get this one? It's like the worst sound to wake up to in your entire life. You know, it's the annoying things. It's the attitude sometimes you get from your kids or from your spouse, maybe on the way to church. Don't look over there, okay, right now. But you get it sometimes, right? And there are these things that happen in your life. You don't lose your faith over them, but you might lose your temper. You might lose your patience. You know, you might lose your peace of mind over it. But they're there, and it's a version of unwellness and trouble that we face in this life. But there's other times where the waves come through, and they're a little bit more substantial. It's when life is honestly, it's not just annoying, it's agonizing. And these are the ones that we tend to run to when you think about unwellness. It's the troubling results that we hear from the doctor. You know, it's when the company downsizes and your job goes with it, or the threat of it happening is circling around you when the company downsizes. It's you know, sitting bedside with someone that's really sick and you're wondering why them and why now? And more, maybe it's even more troubling. You sit graveside with a family. Maybe it's the season of your life where you realize that the relationship's over, or the marriage is unraveling, or your kid is wrestling with anxiety or depression and you don't know what to do with it. And it's so troubling and it's so agonizing to watch. Maybe it's the times where your just prayers go unanswered. And it's bothersome. And that's what your version of unwellness is. That's what your version of trouble is. Or maybe trouble doesn't necessarily knock at your door. Maybe there's a version of this for you and you're like, no, I feel like unwellness in the world, but it's not necessarily knocking on my door, but it's all around me. And maybe it's not annoying and maybe it's not agonizing, but it's just overwhelming to watch. It's overwhelming to just sit there and view it. It's another troubling headline. It's another shooting. It's another war. It's online discord and going like, gosh, why are people like that online? Maybe it's or racial tension or political tension or injustice or poverty or a summer camp where a flash flood comes through and kills innocent girls. And it's overwhelming to watch that. It's overwhelming to see that. It's overwhelming to consider why all this tragedy in the world and in this summer camp that we see happen. We start to wonder, what's wrong with our world? You know, and if you're a person of faith, where is God in all of this? You have a strong desire to respond when people send you those Email salutations. Do you get these email salutations? Do you ever just get them when someone sends you an email that says, like, I hope this email finds you well? And some days you just feel like going, you know what? My strong desire right now is to respond with, it does not. You ever had that desire? No, it doesn't. It doesn't find me well, nor did it yesterday, and I don't know that tomorrow will be any better. But what is the solution? And I want this hymn to speak to us a little bit today, because what if the solution isn't to try to deny this pain or to explain it away or to sidestep it, but to be honest about it and to go, you know what, there's a side of this world where in any of these stages, in any of these versions, there's a certain level of unwellness, and to be honest about it and to try to figure out a better way through it. To kind of reframe the question, I would ask it this way, you know, what if the question is, what does it mean for your soul to be well, even when your world is not? What does it mean for your soul, as Horatio Stafford wrote, what does it mean for your soul to be well, even when your world is not? So we're going to let this hymn preach to us a little bit today. And it's going to point us back to some of God's truths, because that's what he built this whole foundation on. It was written in 1873, like I mentioned to you, so it has some unique words in it, okay? And so we're gonna hit some of these right out of the gate, some really unfamiliar language. But this is what Horatio wrote for us in this hymn. He said, though Satan should buffet, not Satan's buffet, which would, that's a different word, but it would be a radical name for like a all-you-can-eat hot wing restaurant. That'd be cool. So if anybody wants to take that and run with it, feel free. So Satan should buffet, Though trials should come. So he starts right out and he says, you know what, from the top, Horatio tells us, hey, listen what, I'm just gonna assume a truth that we all tend to sidestep if you live life the way we tend to. We all tend to sidestep the fact that however you credit it, wherever you credit from Satan, from world, from karma, whatever you're coming from today, and you're like, hey, I don't know. He starts out with the assumption that trials are gonna come. And however you credit, we live in a world that can feel unwell. We feel in a world where suffering exists, where evil buffets us some days. We live in a world that trials come to us and they meet us. He just starts out, he says, hey, can we just all make that agreement that this is the world that we live in? Even though that happens. And additionally, on top of that, the underlying assumption or knowledge of us is that this isn't just trouble that comes and buffets us. It's not even distributed equally or fairly. Because if you're like me, there's some days you see trouble come and you're like, why them or why now? Or they've been through enough and why do they have even more? But the troublesome truth has been on mankind's mind for a long time. It's been there for as long as the ages are, even back to the days of Jesus. And so this truth that is so troublesome has been talked about for a long time. It's happened for quite a while. And this is makes sense why Jesus would have addressed this even long before Horatio Stafford put pen to paper. It's the reason that Jesus talked about it when he was on the earth, and why when he gathered his disciples together and he talked about this in John chapter 16. John chapter 16, verse 33, and I want to use this as well because Jesus speaks into this in a very important fashion. Jesus gathered his disciples and he told them this. In this world, you will have trouble. He said, disciples, get together. I want you to make sure we all assume this, understand this, not wrestle. We can wrestle with it, but let's not overstep it or overlook it. In this world, you will have trouble. Not you might have trouble, not that maybe it's gonna happen. This is innate to the human journey. Jesus is saying, we best accept this now. In this world, you will have trouble. And you might ask a good question. I would like to think one of the disciples was like, hey, can I ask a follow-up to this? Why all the trouble? If we have a good God and Jesus, you're God and you're good, why all the trouble? And the scriptures trace this origin all the way back to the Garden of Eden, where mankind made a choice. Mankind made a choice to know good and to know evil, but he traced it all the way back to the beginning, where mankind made a choice. And man made a choice to know both good and evil. If you know the story of the beginning, that's how the world, the choice that mankind made at the beginning. Mankind made a choice to know both good and evil, and God allowed it because God always gives us free will. And so since that point, sin, brokenness, trouble has been in the bloodstream of humanity. It has been there for all of us, and we're gonna talk more about this. We're gonna dig into the Bible a little bit more about this afternoon, even at the summer session that I was talking about. If you're interested in knowing a little bit more about that story or processing that more, come this afternoon, because we're gonna talk about it then. But the assumption for us today is that we have a world around us that's broken, and mankind chose it, God allowed it to happen, and still trouble doesn't feel right, does it? It's troubling. Trouble is troubling. And it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like we're made for it. And the reason it doesn't feel like we're made for it is because we weren't. This is not who we were designed to be. We're like a nice car that's been taken off-road. If you've ever taken a really nice car and driven it down a dirt road off-road and it's being whipped by branches and rocks and everything, it doesn't feel, this shouldn't be here. That's the best analogy that I have for who we are in this world, right? Because we're created for a trouble-free existence. And deep down, we feel it, and our soul knows it. And we're homesick. We're homesick for Eden. And that's why trouble feels so troublesome all the time. And it's part of the reason that Jesus looked at us and said, it's important for you to know that you're not created for this place, but you're here, and you will face trouble. And it's why Jesus brings it up, and he tells us it's a liability to wake up every day assuming that life's gonna give you comfort or ease or that's gonna be the default setting that you face. He's like, that's gonna be a liability for you as disciples, it's gonna be a liability for mankind. And Horatio agrees with this, and it's part of the reason that he continued on after he wrote this, and he says, he continued on after this, he said, let this blessed assurance control, which is a strange sentence, isn't it? But he's saying, listen, let this be the controlling thought in your brain. Let there be an assurance of God's truth that controls your brain. Let it be the operating system in your life. Let this blessed assurance control you that Christ has regarded my hopeless estate, which I love that phrase. And I would encourage you to use that this week. When you wake up in the morning, you didn't have a great night's sleep, you have bedhead, you walk down, you're trying to get coffee, and you're like, how are you doing this morning? You're like, I'm in a hopeless estate. Because sometimes it just fits, doesn't it? He says, you know, let this assurance control you that Christ has regarded my hopeless state. Christ has seen us. God has seen into our world. He knows we live in a world of trouble. He's seen your specific trouble, and he has shed his own blood for my soul. That Christ has looked into our world, and he has shed his own blood so that he might be involved in our lives. And this isn't just poetic language for us. This is the core foundation, the center of the Christian faith for us. This right here sums up the gospel message for us, is that in our brokenness, Christ has regarded us and has entered into our world and has paid a price for us. In short, God saw our unwellness not as something to reject, but he saw our unwellness as something to redeem. He saw our unwellness and said, hey, I'm going to enter into the world. I'm not moving on past you. I'm coming in and creating a solution. And God didn't walk away. Even though we chose to know a world of both good and evil, he didn't walk away. Instead, he made a plan and he stepped into it. And he entered into their world and he's entered into our world. And God put on a body in the person of Jesus. And he came into our world. And he came into our world to not just solve the problem of sin, but to help us along our way. And in this process of putting on a body and coming into the world, he experienced trouble. He experienced trouble. He experienced the gravity and the impact of a broken world. He demonstrated his character for us, his love for us, and the way that he treated people in this world. He taught lessons to us. He built bridges to humankind. And then, as you know, the Easter story, he was crucified. He died to pay a penalty that we are owed so that we could be reconnected to our God. And then he was resurrected and lived so he could be active in our lives. And in doing this, he gave access to both him in the lives that we live in our troubled world, but also too, he gave us access to the world after this one. That is the perfect world, the return to Eden that our bodies desire to be a part of, that our lives and our souls desire to be a part of. And this news is why Jesus didn't just stop there in the book of John. That would have been a bummer of a day, wouldn't it? If Jesus said, hey, guess what? Everybody gather around. In this world, you'll have trouble. It's been great. We'll see you later. You know, tip your waiters and waitresses on the way out. That wouldn't have been great, right? But he didn't stop there. He said, in this world, in John 16, he said, in this world, you will have trouble. But he went on after that. He validated the coming storms in the disciples' lives. He said, yeah, you're gonna have trouble, And you're going to face annoyances in this world. You're going to face everything from the annoyances of this world. I don't know what that is for you, broken sandal, jackknife, donkey, whatever it is in your life that you're going to face that's going to be annoying for you. You're going to face those, but also too, I want you to know that you're going to face some agonizing things in your life as well, even down to knowing the fact that 10 of those 12 disciples would be martyred for what they believed. He said, in this world, you're going to face trouble, but then he also said, here's why the story isn't over and why he gave them this truly important commandment after that. He said, in this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, he commanded them. To take heart, to find a reason for your hope, even though fear and pain sometimes rule the day. He said, take heart because of this reason, I have overcome the world. And what does I have overcome the world mean? This is the reason that we can look up when life beats you down. It's because Jesus has overcome the world. He said, I have overcome the world. I've died. I've closed the separation between of worldly sin that was wedged between us. That's been done. He said, I'm available for you as your God. I'm wanting for you. I'm waiting for you. And I'm not interested in watching you struggle. That brings me no pleasure. I've overcome the world and my desire is to be involved, and so invite me in. But as it was in Eden, we all have free will to do that or not. You have the ability, like I have the ability, to get up every day and completely forget that promise from God, to completely forget that God has overcome the world. We have the ability, the free will, because God's not gonna make us. We have the free will to stand up every day and to go on about our lives as if we don't follow Jesus like we said we did on Sunday. And that's not a guilt trip for you. This is a reminder for us as we walk out of the fallen world that you have a God that wants to be involved in your life and has closed the separation that sin put in our world so that he can be involved in your life and to help. And so the question for us, honestly, today is to wrestle with these three. How do we do that? In the world that is so troubling and it is so loud and annoying for us, how do we walk as people that remember the promises of God that he has overcome the world? How do we do that? And I want to give you three today. And there's three little reminders, and these certainly aren't the only ones, but they might help. And the first one is, when we ask, how do we do this? The first one is this, and that is to plan for trouble. I mentioned it. It's easy to grasp and to accept conceptually, but what does it mean to plan for trouble? Well, a soul that is well has learned to expect storms in life. A soul that prepares itself to be well expects there's gonna be trouble every day before it arrives. They plan on it mentally and emotionally, they plan on it. And because to wake up every day, and I do this, I'm just like you. I wake up every day thinking, maybe it's today that everything's go perfectly. Maybe today's the day that everybody agrees with me. There's nothing that goes wrong. Nothing breaks today. Nothing falls apart today. No bad news coming to me today. No random phone calls to me. I do that as well. But living a life, waking up and living a life that way is as unwise as a football team preparing for a big game, going out and running their plays and practicing all that, and then somebody forgetting to tell them there's gonna be an opponent on the other side of the field that tries to tackle you. I know you have great plays to score, but they're going to try to not make that happen. That would be as unwise as it is to wake up every day thinking, this isn't a day that I'm gonna face trouble. You know, preparing for trouble isn't pessimism, it's wisdom. That's what wisdom is to say, I know that today will give me trouble. I don't know what, could be annoying, could be agonizing, could be overwhelming, but I will face trouble today. And it means fighting the tendency to wake up every day assuming that the world is built for your comfort, because it's not. And to believe Jesus, that in this world you will have trouble, expecting trouble. And when it comes, my best tip is to use this second tool. It's to use this tool, this second point, as a tool. And it's a tool that we've used, and I think it's helpful. When trouble hits, to do this. Name the trouble, and then name your truth. What it means to name your trouble and to name your truth, it's a tool that you can use. And you, counselors would agree with this, because you ask any counselor in the world, the last thing you ever try to do is just to deny or sidestep trouble, because it'll eventually catch you. If you just spend your life going, nope, not a problem, nope, gonna push that down, not gonna deal with that, that's not healthy. To hit it head on and to catch it and to say, you know what, I'm gonna call it out and I'm gonna name it. And to hit it head on. But then I'm not just gonna call it out, I'm gonna anchor it to a deeper truth in my life. And anchoring it to a deeper truth might be that you pray it, this becomes your prayer. It might be something that becomes, this is part of my journaling. I write this down every day. But here's the tool. Whether you pray it, whether you journal it, whether you write it down, it's this. And to name your trouble and to name your truth means this. It means starting with, hey, what I'm feeling is blank. And just calling that out. What I'm feeling is blank. Just write it in. What, this is exactly what I'm feeling. But then on top of that, not stopping there because that you've hit it head on. What I'm feeling is this, but what I know is this. And putting in your truth. I name my trouble. What I'm feeling is this, but I also too, I name my truth. I think we have a great example of this in the scriptures. King David, back in the Psalms in the Old Testament, David was a guy after God's heart, really imperfect guy, faced a lot of trouble in his world. Fascinating biography if you read about David. But David wrote a lot of these in the Psalms. The Psalms are about halfway through your Bible. A lot of what the Psalms are basically David's journal. And David did this a lot. I want to read you one. This comes from the book of Psalm right here. Psalm 31. He didn't write this, but this is what David is feeling, okay? David writes, "Be merciful to me, Lord, for I am in distress. My eyes grow weak with sorrow, and my soul and my body with grief." David says, listen, I'm just gonna name the trouble for you, God. I know you see it, but it's good and helpful for me to name it. I'm just gonna name it. This is what I'm feeling. This is my trouble. But then he goes on there. Just a few verses later, he does this. He says this, "But I trust you, Lord. I say, you are my God and my time is in your hands." He says, yep, this is how I'm feeling. It's not good right now. I am not well. But I'll tell you that this is what I know. Even though my emotions don't feel it, my mind tells me that you are my God. You're in charge. You're with me. And my time is in your hands. My life is in your hands. You're gonna lead me to a place. You've promised me that you've overcome the world and you're gonna lead me to a place here and to a place eternally. I think there's a lot of versions of this. I just wrote a few down. Maybe this relates. This is examples. What I'm feeling is afraid about what I just heard from the doctor. But what I know is that God goes with me into every unknown. What I'm feeling is defeated after being passed over for that promotion. But what I know is that my identity is not in a title, but my identity is in Christ. What I'm feeling is exhausted from parenting or from work or from lack of work and looking for work. But what I know is that God gives me strength because he gives strength to the weary. What I'm feeling is overwhelmed for caring for my aging parents. But I know that God promises me wisdom and help if I'll ask him. What I'm feeling is anger over injustice that I see that I can't fix. But what I know is that God is a just and a righteous judge, and he'll one day make all things right. And lastly, what I'm feeling is uncertain about the future. But what I know is Jesus has already overcome the world, and because of him, my story is not over, and my hope is not lost. I realize this practice can feel a little unfamiliar to do that, and I get it. It's hard to explain how God might work through just the practice of journaling and stating truths and just stating your trouble. I get it. It's weird to think about. But I can also tell you this, is that I don't just believe in it, but I've lived it. I've walked this practice before. Some of you know this part of our family story, but between April 2020 and June of 2024, I sat beside my mother, my father, and my 15-year-old son at the end of their lives. It was a hard, hard season for us as a family. It was a hard season, and we walked through months and months of grief and through heartache and through uncertainty. In a lot of ways, we still do. And there were a lot of long nights and a lot of really heavy mornings in our life. But this practice became one of the things in our life where we leaned on it. It became a practice for us. And like Anna Stafford to say, what should I do? We're able to put pen to paper or put thought in place in prayer and say, God, this is where I am, but this is what we need. This is what I'm feeling, but this is what I know. This is what I'm feeling, but this is what I know. This is what I'm feeling, but this is what I know. What I'm feeling is broken, Lord, but what I know is that you're a God that's promised to be close to the brokenhearted, and it's where we are. And it brought nobody back. Nobody came back. But it changed the way that we looked at life. It changed the way that we looked at the day in front of us. It reminded us to look up. It reminded us to keep our eyes up to see how God was using other people in our lives. It allowed us to see the unique ways that God is encouraging us and redeeming things and how he brought peace to us in unexpected places. And you know what? I'm not the only one. I mean, if we had time, we could go around and people in this room that have tried this and follow Jesus in faith will tell you, here's my version of that story. You sit around a lot of people today that could tell you the same story of how in their pain and in their unwellness, they leaned into God and they leaned into him by just simply calling out, God, this is where I am and I don't know what to do, but here's what I know about you, or here's what I've been told about you, and here's what you've promised to me. And they've walked from seasons of pain and unwellness to seasons of greater faith, to greater dependence, to greater healing, and ultimately to seasons of greater hope because of it. And like I said, it's hard to understand how it works, but it does, because you have a God that's active and living and desires to be in your life that way. And all of those people would tell you about the anchor they found in storms, and they found it in their faith. But how trouble didn't get ultimately the final say in their life, and how God redeemed it. God redeemed it in ways, and he redeemed good from terrible things in your life. And lastly, there's just number three reminder for you. And that is that God calls us to live with an eternal perspective. And this is hard to do. It's really difficult to do in our world around us, where the tyranny of the urgent and everything around us that's carnal and worldly calls to us every day for us to be able to people that pick our heads up and look and know that, hey, you know what? I'm not created for this world. I'm in it. And in this world, I will have trouble, but there is an ultimate destination for me. I think this is what Horatio Stafford found peace in. This is what he wrote in, and this is why I love this stanza that he writes that finishes it as well. He says, and Lord, haste the day when my faith shall be sight. God, I can't wait for the day that I don't have to have faith anymore. I don't have to wonder anymore. I don't have to wrestle anymore, but because I don't have to have faith, because I'll see it. I'll see that our ultimate destination is there for me. Haste that day. Bring that day soon where my faith is no longer needed, because I'll have sight. Then the clouds will be rolled back as a scroll, and the trump, which is a trumpet, don't get distracted. The clouds will be rolled back as a scroll, and the trump shall resound. The trumpet shall resound, and it will call the Lord into this world. And the Lord shall descend, and even so till that day, even so to that day, with my view of heaven, my view of heavenward, even so to that day, I'm gonna tell you, it is well with my soul, even in this world now, because I have you with me. But Horatio said, hey, I'm gonna keep an eternal perspective in my life. I'm gonna work every day to pick my head up and remember what I was created for. Horatio Stafford's hope was in heaven. He knew, as they would call it in Hebrews chapter 11, I'm an alien and a stranger here. In other words, I'm only here for a bit. I'm kind of moving through. I'm not unpacking too much here, because I'm here for a season and I'm an alien and stranger, and I'm ultimately a resident, a citizen in heaven. He didn't expect all of his pain to be resolved here. His hope was forward facing as he looked out into the world. He knew he was built for heaven, and through Jesus, he trusted that he would get there one day and he would be there, and that would be his ultimate destination, because as the scriptures tells us, even after these light and momentary troubles, the momentary troubles, which in the name of eternity will just be a moment for us, he'll end up in his ultimate destination of heaven. And so we're called to do the same. We're called to be people that place our faith in Jesus, but also to our hope in heaven. We find that opportunity that sits in front of us every day. So the question is, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do when your version of unwellness kicks in later today, later this week, later this year? In whatever version it is, because unwellness comes in various ways. Will you rest in the one that says, take heart. I've overcome the world. Take heart in that. Will you do that? Because trouble will find you, and the question is, will that find you as well? Will you take it all to Jesus? As familiar or as foreign as that sounds to you, Some of you might do it for the very first time. Some of you are like, you know what? I do it all the time. I forgot. I've gotten off track. Whatever their version is, will you take it to him? Because his promise and his call to you is bring it to me. And even declare through your doubts or your fears or your anger to say, you know what? It's not well with my circumstances. But have the faith to say, it's not well in my circumstances, but because of you, it's well with my soul, though. Deep down, I feel it. It's well with my soul. So that's the challenge for you. And we'd love to sing this over you. We'd love to sing this Horatio Spafford's hymn over you today. And maybe this is your moment. Maybe it's your moment to just spend some time letting it wash over you. Maybe you want to concentrate on these words, but maybe this is a moment that you might spend in prayer. Maybe it's just doing what I said, going to God. I'm just going to name my trouble. I know you know it, but it's going to help me to name it. And I'm also going to name my truth. And part of that truth might be, God, help me. Help me in my doubt. Help me in my fear. Help me in my pain. Whatever that is. To be able to say, this is what I feel, but this is also what I know. And one thing I know, God, is that you came into this world and you closed the gap of sin so you could be with us. You could be with me. And that's what I rely on today. So we sing that, like, that's your opportunity. And as a church, we're excited to built and designed and eager to walk with you through trouble as well. That's why we're here. That's why community is so important. Let me pray for us and we'll sing. God, thank you for the truth. Thank you for Horatio Spafford and through his tragedy, what he gives us, a great reminder of the truths that you've given to us, that Jesus told us way back in the day that we will have trouble, Father, but also too that we can take heart because of what you've done in our lives, Father. Help us to be people that don't sidestep trouble. We don't assume it won't come, Father, but we're not captive to it. Father, help us to be people that when trouble hits, we take heart. And we understand who you are and what you've called us to be and who you are in our lives. And so, Father, just help us to be people of faith. Help us to be people that can, amid the waves of trouble in our life, find the wisdom that you promised to us, the healing, the redemption that you promised to us, and give it to us back. It helps to be people that call for it and look for it first and foremost in our lives. Thank you for loving us. Thank you that you came into our sin and our world not to walk away from it, God, but to redeem and relieve us from it. And we're grateful for that. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.